Good evening. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy. I am an alcoholic. Housekeeping. We will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previously recorded meetings on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity. To accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use the room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Anybody in the room? At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple actions. This is the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step three. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Ebony and Karen. I will read the first paragraph on page 63, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Okay. Page 63, step four, we're doing resentments. Made a searching and fear, did I mess y'all up thinking that I no. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From its stem, all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? Ebony.
Hey, y'all, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony.
Hey, Ebony.
I have not had a drink since Friday, the 13th, November 2015. I accidentally got sober. I had no plans of being here. I like to say that first off, because whatever is here in Alcoholics Anonymous, God is magical. Have a home group. It is now Downtown Young and Sober. We meet Thursday nights at 8 p.m. And I have a sponsor that knows she's my sponsor. I have the privilege of sponsoring other people by taking them through the 12 steps. I have a service position inside my home group and outside of my home group. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I need to say. Well, I don't need to say anything. But anyways, I say all of that stuff, not because I'm trying to give you an impressive resume, but because I am an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can never repay the freedom. I can never repay the peace. I can never repay the life that I have inside Alcoholics Anonymous or outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I have today is a direct result of working these 12 steps. So I try to stay as active as possible. So with that being said, the fourth step, I remember when I first showed up here at that first meeting, hearing people talk and not having any idea what was going on. And that probably went on for maybe the first 2 months, but there was always this little subtle chatter in the background of like, fourth step's going to be scary. Fourth step's the boogeyman. Oh, you're going to have to tell someone, and automatically thinking, that's not me. I'm not doing that. That was one of the steps I decided was not needed for the type of alcoholism from which I suffer. It might be good for you, but it's not what I need to find peace. You know, I just came here because I drink a little too much. People around me take it a little too seriously. We'll see what's going to happen, but definitely not doing that. But, you know, there's something about being an Alcoholics Anonymous and being full of pride, ego, self-will, anger, fear, not drinking, that sitting in meetings with that stuff festering made me willing to finally do whatever people were saying. You know, and how it works, it says, if you want what we have and you're willing to do what we do, then you are ready to take certain steps. You know, and finally, I came to the point where I had both of those. I wanted what you had, and I was willing to do what you did. And that included a fourth step. My first sponsor, when I did my first fourth step, picking my words, we did it with a worksheet. And that worksheet was amazing. It was pretty. It's the kind of stuff I love. It's a spreadsheet. I love spreadsheets. I like to see my data laid out clearly in an organized fashion. I like to collect it. And it was a bit helpful. I also worked the steps for the first time through the 12 and 12. I love that book. It's amazing. I think it's a great supplemental material. But all I found from doing that, honestly, was relief. What I needed was freedom. You know, and for me, this inventory was the first part of finding some freedom. You know, and I say all of that because when I got my second sponsor, we followed the directions that are in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which are laid out right here. So I love how it starts. You know, now I've made this spiritual contract with God. I'm in it to win it. I've made the decision that I'm going to go through with what's going on, with what everyone's telling me I need to do, because I don't like feeling the way I feel anymore. Now I'm stone cold sober, and all the stuff that's been eating me up, the stuff that's blocking me off from the sunlight of the spirit, I feel it. I feel it even more now. I'm in meetings and you guys are smiling and I'm just angry. I'm in meetings and I know your names, but I still want nothing to do with you. And I don't understand. Like, we just said this prayer, and I loved the fact that the phrase broken was in there, because I didn't know I was broken. And so this inventory is exactly what I need. So now I'll talk about what was actually right. all of those extra words. But so I love how it starts. Like, next, we launched out on this vigorous action immediately. And what that looks like for me today is, after making that contract with God and saying that prayer, is going home and writing down everything I'm angry at. You know, I had a conversation with someone I'm working with recently, and they were like, well, I don't think I have any resentments. And I just kind of laughed to myself. You know, I'm at that point now where I can just laugh, and I'm not laughing at them. I'm laughing because I can relate. You know, I didn't know what a resentment was, but I do know what it feels like to see someone in a coffee shop and be angry and want to go the opposite way. I do know what it's like to avoid different places because I might run into someone. I do know what it's like to say, I'm not going there or I'm not watching that because of the emotions and the things that bubble up in me. And this is what this inventory does. This is what the personal house cleaning for me is. And I love that it says it's a vital and crucial step that will have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort. I have work to do. I have things that must be done if I want this freedom that I hear people talking about. And I don't want to do it, but I want to do it. And I'm stuck in this little place. And my sponsor tells me that, hey, how about you just ask God? Why don't you just ask God to guide your pen and get down to putting it down on paper? And I start doing that. I start listing everything I'm angry at. But I love this resentment is the number one offender. Because if you would have asked me what it was that took alcoholics out, I would just say people, places, and things. Because that's what I hear all the time in meetings. Sorry, not sorry. People, places, and things. That's what takes me out. But it's really this thing that is cutting me off from you and everybody else. It's this thing that's cutting me off from the love of something in this universe. You know, it's that those feelings of resentment, of anger, of ill will, that I just can't continue living this way. And I know what effect will help me forget that stuff, what will help me. So I love that it tells me right here, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Because I always want to go mentally and physically first, and then maybe the God stuff later. Maybe the spiritually stuff later. I'll go to the gym, I'll count my calories, I'll do all of that stuff, you know, but maybe all of that stuff will work out. You know, but I kept hearing over and over again, and I came to believe in other people's experience that this is something that I must be done. So I love how it breaks it down. And I am a big book sponsor today. You know, I'm someone who, if it says write, we write. If it says pray, we pray. If it says go out, we go out. So I love how it gives me these clear-cut directions right here. What am I doing? Well, first, I set them on paper. It's not this thinking in my head, because I do that all the time. I'm actually sitting down with pen and paper, and I'm writing down these things. And then I ask myself why I'm angry. That's the easy part. Ask me any day. I can tell you all the time why I'm angry. You know, I love that part. And then this, in most cases, it's found our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, ambitions, and personal relations were hurt or threatened. And I want to argue it's so much more than that. It's so much more than those simple things. Like, it's my family background. It's the way the world treats me. It's I'm not appreciated. It's I don't have enough. But really, when I start to put this stuff down in black and white, I see it really does. Those are the anchors. Those are the anchors for everything else that comes up for me. You know, and I remember thinking the second time I did it with my current, I don't know, sometime working with that sponsor, thinking like ambitions only have to do with my career. Ambitions, like I'm not ambitious. I love what I do. As long as I can keep doing that for the rest of my life, I'm good. I'm not ambitious. And then she was like, do you know what ambitions are? No, of course I don't, but I'll pretend, you know. And I have right here, ambitions, a desire to achieve a particular end. I used to be one of those people who was like, if it's not in the big book, it's garbage. Expectations isn't in the 164, it's garbage, don't talk to me. But ambitions are the same thing to me as expectations. I have all of these secret expectations, all of these secret ambitions on how things are supposed to end. And I start seeing this as I'm checking it off as I go. But I'm going to stop right there. Thanks for letting me share.
I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 14th, 2018. I have a sponsor. She knows that she sponsors me. And I have had the privilege of taking a look found in through the steps found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Step four. So, you know, Ebony said that she accidentally got sober. I like to say I was tricked. I was tricked by medical professionals to turn myself in for my drinking. And then somehow I ended up in the great state of Virginia, hated every second of it. And then I showed up to the rooms and found you people and was like, ugh, so happy, so annoying. And 5 years down the road, I'm still here. I had an exit strategy probably the first year and a half I was sober. And then after that, I was kind of like, well, you guys got me till you got me, I guess. Step four for me, when I heard about step four, I wanted to skip 1, 2, and 3 and get to 4. Because I figured, okay, if I can write everything down and figure out what's wrong with me, I can go fix it. And then I don't need you people anymore. And I can leave. Please let me leave. And that my sponsor obviously didn't let me do that, which was very rude. And so we went through step 1, which is a very long step. And then got through step 2, got through step 3, and step 4. I was so excited to get done, because I was like, once I write everything down, that's it. I have my blueprint for what I need to go fix by myself in my little corner with Karen, and I don't ever have to come back here again. And so a lot of people who were like, oh, I don't want to do my 4th step, I literally within maybe a day was like, yep, I'm done. My sponsor's like, no, you're not. Please go back and be more thorough. I'm like, okay. Next day, okay, I'm done. No, you're not. And it took a few tries before she finally figured that I had gone thoroughly enough over my inventory, because I was trying really hard just to get it over with. And in reading this, when it talks about resentment is the number one offender, when I first came in the rooms, I'm like, what are y'all talking about? Like, you talk about spirituality, you talk about a God grade, a God of my understanding and pulling my life over. And now you're talking about resentment. Like, when are we going to talk about the alcoholism? When are we going to talk about the fact that when I drink, I can't control myself for some reason? When are you going to tell me that there's a way I can drink and I don't have to come to these meetings anymore? When do we graduate? That was the frustration for me. And so when I got to my 4th step and I see resentment, the number one offender, I'm just like, okay, here we go with more spiritual stuff. And then it talks about, we listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. It doesn't say with whom we were resentful, because if it would have said that, I would have probably said, I'm not resentful. I'm very understanding. I understand why things happen the way they happen. I'm very realistic on my worldview. That's fine. But it says with whom we were angry. And at the time, anger was my number one default emotion. I could tell you who I was angry at. And then when it goes into, we ask ourselves why, in most cases, we found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships were hurt or threatened. That whole sentence to me prior to taking the steps is, this is going to sign off my victimhood. This is going to sign off why I'm angry, because you hurt my self-esteem. You hurt my pocketbook. You hurt my ambitions. You hurt my personal relationships. You hurt me. You all hurt me, because that was my narrative for a very, very long time. It wasn't about my response or reaction to this world. It wasn't about stepping on the toes of my fellows and then retaliating. It was all about me being a victim and having an excuse to drink. And I really thought for a long time that's what this list was going to do for me, was give me the blueprint of, here's what's wrong with you, go figure it out on your own, but also here's your justification for why you drink, and it's okay. And that's what I thought this step was gonna be about. And as we read on, spoiler alert, it does not do that. But in reading this, it's very important when I still read this today, you know, when it talks about resentment being the number one offender, you know, having spiritual malady to overcome, that is true for me today. This is not when I, you know, it's not after I've gone through the step, I go back and read it and it's like, oh yeah, that was me in the past. No, this is me today. This is me 5 years without a drink. This is me getting resentful because people, places, and things don't treat me the way I feel like I should be treated. And I have to constantly remind myself where I'm at and remind myself when those resentments pop up to nip them in the butt right away. Because once those resentments take root for me, it's a lot harder to pull them back up. But that's all I got on this part of the reading. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. The next reading begins on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. We're going to turn over to page 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. to the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die.
All right. So I was at a 10th step meeting recently, and they were reading those 10th step promises and talks about we cease fighting anyone or anything. And as we're reading this, I'm just kind of giggling at the first paragraph where it says the usual outcome was that people continue to wrong us. Yes, they always wrong me. No one does what I want, how I want, when I want. And we stayed sore. There's nothing worse for me than the experience I had in early sobriety of wanting a spiritual experience, wanting to change, but not being there yet. And then so I would be angry, but I knew I'm not supposed to be angry. I'm not supposed to have resentment. So then I get mad at myself for being mad at other people. And to me, that's exactly what this, you know, it was remorse. And then we were sore at ourselves. You know, I'm mad at myself for being mad at you because I want to do better. But the problem with my alcoholism is my brain. Like I used to hear people say a sick mind can't heal a sick mind. And I didn't, that didn't make sense. There's so many things in this fellowship. Like there's this secret undercover language that's spoken in these meetings that I could not understand, but I would try to make it up in my head, but I'd lack the experience for it to fall into place. And there's something about finally realizing that I can't do this on my own. You know, it was a whole new layer of powerlessness as I'm writing this fourth step, as I'm looking at my resentments, you know, and I think about this, you know, a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. That's pretty much where I was for a very long time. And I wish I could say, and I've never been there before since I took my first inventory. No, I go back often. But today I have tools to help with that, which is tied to that 10th step meeting. But I love this part where it tells me with the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. Taking my words carefully again, restraining the tongue and pen. I like the fact that it says maintenance and growth, because for a long time, I just wanted to maintain. I just want to maintain a certain level of cool. Maintain a certain level of sobriety, maintain, because that means I don't have to do any extra work. I want to do as least work as possible for maximum benefit. So I like that it tells me right here, the hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. How do I grow? Well, first it's by looking at these things that are blocking me off. You know, the running joke with people who know me is I always say, I want to shimmy in the sunlight. What does that mean today? For other people, they say happy, joyous, and free. To me, it's just looking up to the sky and feeling this warmth that I'm okay, that I'm enough, that I can do things. You know, and so for me, when I look, I keep saying for me, and it's annoying my brain, but I read these paragraphs, and harboring such feelings shut me off from the sunlight of the spirit. I can't see what happiness is. I can't feel peace or serenity because all I feel is the anger of the things you've done to me and the things that have happened to me. All I can feel are the things that I want and I'm still not getting, the needs that are not being met. And so as I read this and I think, okay, maintenance and growth, it's like a garden. If I want a garden, I'm going to have to, first I have to get the soil ready. Then I got to plant some stuff. Then I got to water it. Then I got to prune. And then I don't garden. So there's other work. But like all of this is work that I have to do. And that's the same thing for this spiritual life. I can't just get it through osmosis. Going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous was great. It's a fun time. You guys are cool. You make me feel good. But when I'm at home with my parents and they don't understand, when I'm at home with my boyfriend and he's not following the script, when I'm driving and traffic is crazy, like I need something that I can lean into. I need a way to process this. And that's what the fourth step is for me. It's a fact-facing and fact-finding process to see the things that are really blocking me and standing in my way. That's all I have right now.
Going back through our lives, you know, I had resentments from when I was like very, very, very young, to the point where I could process what you were saying and doing. I was judging you and I was getting resentments all along the way. And then, you know, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. So again, for me, I tried to fast forward my way through it, and my sponsor made sure I was very, very thorough and completely honest in what I was saying. And then, you know, the first thing that was apparent was this world and its people were often quite wrong, which again, that just solidified, like, yes, it's going to tell me that I am justified in my anger, because justifiable anger is a really big thing for me. I like to think that I have a right to be angry. And the book even says that it's really dangerous to be in that area of justifiable anger, because then it leads into resentment, which is our number one offender. So for me, I have to really, really be on guard when it comes to feeling like I am owed to feel the way I want to feel, whether that is conducive to my spiritual well-being or not. And then the usual outcome was people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. And it's like, well, duh, like everyone's wronging me all the time. And of course I'm going to be sore. You're never letting the wound heal. Because it's, you know, you're responsible for healing me. Okay. You're responsible for apologizing to me, and you're responsible for taking care of my emotional well-being, because whether I am happy, sad, or indifferent is based on how you are treating me. Everything is based on outward circumstances at this point in my life when I'm taking the fourth step originally. And today I realize life isn't coming at me, it's coming from me. And today my emotional state of being or my spiritual state of being isn't based on what's happening around me. I've been in a lot of situations around people that, you know, I don't like. You know, I've been overseas stationed for the past 2 years, and you're kind of stuck with what you got. All right. You're stuck with the people that you got there. I'm about to go to a 12 square mile long island and be stuck with people that I'm stuck with. So there's really nowhere to go. But with that, regardless of what's going on outside of me, I can still maintain my spiritual fitness and I can still stay in the sunlight of the spirit today because I took a fourth step, and because I continue to take a fourth step and take personal daily inventory and make sure to look at these things before the resentments start to take root in my life. And then it talks about, to the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander hours that might've been worthwhile? And the hours and probably years of anger and resentment, the nights that I drink at you because you did me wrong. So I'm going to show you, I'm going to go out and just get blackout drunk and lose 3 days. And it's all your fault. And I lost so much time that I can never get back. And so today what I try to do is when I start to feel anger or resentment, sometimes I let myself feel what I need to feel, but I definitely set a timer and say, okay, I'm going to take 20 minutes, an hour, whatever it is. I'm going to feel what I need to feel. And then I need to call another alcoholic, or I need to go get outside of myself so that I don't let those things take root in me. And it, you know, it says to the extent that we permit these, I permit that in my life. Because again, before it was everyone else's fault. Nothing was my responsibility. And today it's saying that I permit these things. I permit those outward circumstances to affect my spiritual well-being or my emotional state of being. And the fact that I am giving other people permission to take time away from my life today is just baffling. It's like, why would you permit this? Why would you permit to be angry, discontent, and miserable and unhappy today? You know, if you would have asked me that, I would have been like, I don't permit that. What are you talking about? I don't do that. But I do. And you know, when harboring such feelings, we, you know, shut ourselves off, and the insanity alcohol returns and we drink again. And again, like that is very, very true. It's as true today as it was when I first read it, when I first did my fourth step. The insanity of alcohol returns when we drink again. That is an omen of, hey, if I don't stay on this spiritual plane, if I don't stay in the sunlight of the spirit, if I don't catch these resentments before they take root, and if I permit these things to squander my happiness, I can drink again. And that's as true today as it was 5 years ago. And today I get to choose where I spend my time, where I spend my hours. I can either squander them on resentments, or I can reach out and help somebody else and get outside of myself and possibly have a spiritual experience. Because sometimes the best thing I can do is reach out to another alcoholic, and all of a sudden they tell me something that I need to hear, or I end up helping them out and I'm outside of myself. And that to me is a spiritual experience. And that's all I got on these.
We're going to continue on page 66. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one.
So I love this. We turned back to the list. Because if you would have asked me, I thought I was done taking this inventory. But I've made just a beginning, you know, and so I love this part. I have written in my book, A Perspective Change. I'm prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. You know, I don't look at things from different angles because I'm always right. I don't need a shift in perspective. I don't need to see it from your point of view because I know what I know, and these facts hold true for me and everyone around me. Part of the reason why I'm here. And so I love this. We begin to see the world and its people really dominate us. So this jargon that goes on in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, some of these phrases really confused me, you know, and I would hear this thing of victims don't recover. And I couldn't understand, you know, because if it doesn't make sense to me, then I'm not going to move forward with action, because everything in my head had to be intellectualized. Like, I have to be able to name it and understand it and then be able to describe and teach it. And I would hear that phrase and not know what it meant. And finally, I had my old timer say, "Well, if you don't know, why don't you just ask for help?" Like, what? You can ask for help in Alcoholics Anonymous. I already did it once with a sponsor, but okay. And I asked someone, you know, and I didn't like their answer. And so I asked this person, I was like, "Well, what do they mean?" And this man who had been taking me through the big book at the time, he told me, like, "Do you have your book with you?" So we get my book and we're outside of candlelight one Friday. I used to show up early so I could ask these random questions. And we turn to this page and we start reading it. You know, because for me, as I'm writing it down, it's very easy for me to see the fancied stuff. I can see how I've made this whole scenario up in my head, and you didn't even know that's what I expected you to do. All of that stuff, as I'm writing it down, that stuff is all, God is already clearing that part out for me. But it was the real stuff, the real things that I've experienced in life that made me feel like, I don't know about this resentment stuff now. Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know if this is for me anymore, you know, because I don't understand. I could not understand how this would excuse away my experiences of the past. because that's what I thought I was hearing. But thank God for effective sponsorship, and thank God for the people who, I heard a speaker say, if you can't sponsor, adopt a baby. I didn't know what that meant. And what she was talking about for adopt a baby is like, get a newcomer, befriend them, answer their questions, have coffee. And thank God for the people who adopted me as I journeyed this path, you know, because this man sat down and he was like, well, we can either be a victim or we can be a victor. I'm not responsible for the things that have happened to me in the past, but I am responsible for, am I going to still use this as an excuse to behave like a psychotic, raging lunatic all the time? You know, or am I going to try to process these things? You know, Alcoholics Anonymous and these 12 steps are not a cure-all for everything. I will say that. But what it did help me do was to process some things and to clear away enough stuff that was blocking me off to get other help elsewhere. But I love this, the grouch and the brainstorm. I'm not much of the grouch, but I am a brainstorm person. You know, I'm always thinking of plan A, B, C, A sub one, A subset two, A subset three. I told you I love spreadsheets. I love Excel. I love all of that stuff. And all of a sudden, like, it's like, you can see, my sponsor once texted me in a meeting. It was like, I can see you thinking from across the room. Like, that's how my brainstorm looks. I just go into a completely different zone and my brain is just going 1,000 miles. And it's just like this dust of nobody else in this world exists but Ebony. And so I love how it tells me, like, that's not for me anymore. And how this stuff has the actual power to kill. Because I'm no longer growing. I'm no longer participating in life. I'm no longer seeking to maintain or grow spiritually. I am stuck. I am stuck in that aloneness, that separateness, that anxiety, fear. I am stuck. And so I love how it says, like, well, how can this stuff be mastered? Well, the first part is the sick man's prayer. Yeah, the people who wronged us are spiritually sick like me. We are sick together, because for a long time, I just been like, oh, bless your heart. You're spiritually sick. Like, and then that sick man's prayer, for a very long time, my prayer was like, God, save me from being angry. That was it. It had nothing to do with like this perspective, you know, and I have it broken down. Like, can I look at this person as spiritually sick like me? Can I ask my God to show me how to be helpful and treat them with kindness, patience, love, and tolerance? Can I treat this person who's making me angry the same way I would treat my mother who has dementia? Can I treat them like a sick friend? Like, that's a tall order for someone like me, because I don't want to do that. I don't want to be useful and helpful. I just want to ignore and evade. Like, oh, they're over there. I'm going this way. That's how I like to live my life. And it tells me, no, today I get to suit up and show up. And what does that look like? You know, it looks like extending the hand of the fellowship. It looks like being kind despite what's going on in this chatterbox up here. Sometimes it's just keeping my mouth shut. A lot of the times it's just keeping my mouth shut. Most of the time it's just keeping my mouth shut. I gotta say it a lot. It's very important. Sometimes that's the biggest way I can be helpful to someone. You know, and I like how it tells me I can destroy my chance of being helpful, because I'm not thinking about future occurrences where I might be able to be helpful. I'm thinking about what's going on right now in the moment and how you are screwing me over and how I'm going to shut you down or how I'm going to prove you wrong. But instead, it's avoid retaliation and argument. Like, I don't like that. Like, I like to choose my battles, and all my battles are everything that shows up in my front door. But I don't have to live this way today. And then the way it ends with, I cannot be helpful to all people. Like, I have to remember that. You know, just because I found a way of life that works for me and gives me some sense of peace, strength, faith, all of that stuff, I can't be helpful to all people. But God will show me how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. You know, I heard a friend talking about the difference between tolerating and tolerance last week. You know, and I love that, because I remember hearing that same share like 3 years sober and thinking like, oh my gosh, I've been tolerating all of you for so long. Like, I can't wait for you to shut up so I can just get on with what I have planned. instead of trying to put myself in your shoes and see where you're coming from? Can I see you as another child of God? Like, can I love you like my sibling? Can I love you like I would my child? And that to me is a big difference of between tolerating and taking a tolerant view, treating you with love, kindness, and understanding. You know, and I fall short often. Let me just go ahead and clear that up. I fall short often, but it's something, it's a goal. It's something for me to reach and grow towards. So thanks.
Turning back to the list, prepared to look from an entirely different angle. The first time I went through my four step, I was not ready to see it from an entirely different angle because I was still angry. We didn't get past the anger part. I was like, told me to write down people, places, and things I was angry at. I did that. I'm still angry. I don't care. And, you know, it obviously dominated me. It obviously had a big part of my life and it was blocking me from so many great things. And it talks about fancied or real had the power to actually kill. Today, what that looks like for me is I'm able to deal with the fancied stuff. That stuff is easier because it's like, okay, it's probably my fault. Probably, maybe, possibly, we'll inventory it. But it, at the end of the day, I can handle it. It's that real stuff that I really have a hard time with. When I call my sponsor and I'm like, hey, this situation is happening. Here are the facts and circumstances. And she's like, that sounds like a real situation. I'm like, dang it. Because I can't change other people's behavior. And I'm no longer the director. So today, I try not to be. So when it comes to being a real situation, there's only so much within my control that I can do. And I can't control other people today. And that's where I realize that other people are spiritually sick. And then it turns into the sick man's prayer, which I do have to say very often. I have a job where I go to work and I arm up with a weapon every day and I say this prayer. And at the end, I say, thy will be done, because if it's my will, I'm going to shoot him. So it's a real threat to people's livelihoods and mine. But and I try really, really hard to say the prayer before I go into work with all the greatest intentions. And sometimes I, within 20 minutes, have to go to the bathroom and say the prayer again because it's like, look, Lord, I asked you to take care of this and he looked at me funny and I just can't take it anymore. And I really, really have to, because even today, anger is my default setting. It is my default defensive setting. And I have to be very mindful when I start to lose my patience, when I start to get upset, and when I am just really angry at an individual, because unfortunately, I have a rule book today. Okay, I have a rule book. I have to do all these steps. I have to do these inventories. And then when I'm wrong, I have to admit it and make amends. That's so unfair. And if none of these other people outside of the rooms have this program. And I cannot tell you how many times I've looked at someone at my job and been like, I wish I could tell you to go talk to your sponsor right now because you owe me an amends. And I just, it's, you know, in practicing these principles in all our affairs, it's really easy for me to practice these principles. It's really easy for me to not be angry and to say the sick man's prayer and be all kumbaya in the rooms of, you know, a meeting. And then when I go out into the real world and I go out into my job and with my family and with my friends, it's a whole different ball game when I'm having to really pay attention to how I'm responding to the environment around me. It says we avoid retaliation or argument. I do not. I try really, really hard, but my job is very much about aggression and argumentativeness. And so that for me is always really, really hard. I do try to be very mindful of my actions today as far as retaliation. Even this morning, I'm here TAD en route, you know, going through a class, learning to be an instructor. And this one guy, he has shown up late every day for the entirety of this course. And it really makes me upset. And in my mind, the instructor should just kick him out and ruin his life because that's what I would do. But again, I'm not the director. I don't run the schoolhouse. I'm not the instructor yet. I don't have the NEC, but we had to do teach backs. And guess who's in my group for teach backs? This individual. And they told us, as someone is teaching, make sure you give feedback, make sure you're not just dead-eyeing them and staring at them. And a lot of people were doing that. And I was like, and I was sitting next to my friend, and I thought, if my friend was up there teaching right now, would I be sitting here just staring at him? No. And then I tried to treat him as if my friend was up there teaching. I answered the questions. I was engaging. I even gave him positive feedback at the end that just rotted my soul. But I don't own amends today. And that's sometimes that's my criteria. I'm like, you know what? I can either act right, avoid retaliation and argument, and not own amends later, or I can act the way I think I want to act and indulge in my spiritual sickness. And then my sponsor is going to tell me I own amends, and I'm just not going to do that because I'm stubborn. So I would rather not make an amends later. But that's how I have to retrain my brain today. And that's still the way it is, you know, from the first time I took this step to now, it's constantly retraining my brain to remind myself, this person is spiritually sick in their own way. Just because it's not alcoholism doesn't mean that it's not valid, whatever it is. And then it says we can't be helpful to all people, which is very true. People are people. They're going to do what they do. The world is imperfect. But at least my higher power has shown me to take a kind and tolerant view towards everyone. And at least at the bare minimum, I can treat someone with dignity and respect today, which I was pretty much incapable of. And that's all I got.
Our final reading is page 67. Referring to our list again. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight.
Huh. I read this and I just think, I have some weird quirks about me. Mm-hmm. And one of them is like, when I hear people talk about their experiences, and sometimes I get jealous and I'm like, man, that must be nice. My sponsor held me accountable. And like, that's what I read in this paragraph. Like, I'm just saying, I'm just being honest, because there's a big book sponsor who follows the directions, doesn't add extra fluff or icing, is exactly what I needed when I went through my inventory. And I read this and I think about, like, these are clear-cut directions, putting out of my mind the wrongs others had done. My sponsor doesn't want to hear me talk about, well, my dad did this. Like, no, I had already done the cause why I was angry. I've already written stuff down. Like, I'm not here to look at where my part is. Like, I'm not here for my part, you know, because my part is always going to start at, like, it was 60-40, and then my part gets smaller as the further away from the incident goes. You know, so I like how it tells me right here, completely forget about the other person involved, Ebony. They are no longer here. Let's just look at me, which is usually my favorite thing, but not when it comes to accountability. Like, let's just look at me. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or frightened? And it's not just me writing down, oh, selfish, frightened. Like, oh, it's right here. It tells me towards the end, like, when we saw our faults, we listed them. I was selfish because how was I selfish? You know, how was I dishonest? How was I self-seeking? And it sounds tedious because it was and it is. But at the same token, the more specific and detailed and as honest and thorough as I am, I get 100 times in return of peace. If someone asked me yesterday, like, what are you up to today? And I was like, I'm just trying to breathe. Like, that's a big deal for me today, to just know when I need to just breathe. And by doing this and looking at my part, it's like looking at where I was to blame, I can breathe. You know, because now I'm seeing in black and white, it's like I'm making a list of how not to behave, how not to treat people, how not to react in life. You know, and so I'm writing this down, and I love that it tells me this inventory is mine, not the other person's. Oh, I am no longer sitting here doing the first three columns where I'm talking about, well, I'm angry at my sister because she thinks she's the favorite child. She's not. I'm angry at my sister because she lives so far away. I'm no longer doing this. I'm talking about how when I don't get my way, I don't call my sister. I don't do the things I say I'm going to do. How I take her for granted. How I borrow money and have no plans of returning it. We'll just catch up to that stuff later. You know, and so I like how it tells me, I admit these wrongs honestly, and I'm willing to set these matters straight. You know, it doesn't say, okay, now Ebony, you're done, burn your fourth step. It doesn't say that. Because once again, I refer to this list again, and it's very important for me, you know, because I remember I heard, once again, someone's like, I burned my fourth step. And I was like, that sounds like a great idea. I'm going to burn mine. And then my sponsor was like, no, you're not. No, you're not. We're going to use this, you know, and I'm speaking for Ebony. This invisible fourth column was no longer invisible because I had to put pen to paper for it. There is power in finally seeing, like, these are the things. For so long, I was looking for what was wrong. But the truth is, these are the things that made me feel like I was rotting from the inside out. These were the things I've been running from. These are the things that created that apartness, that separation, that loneliness. These are the things. And finally, I have it in black and white. And the hope for me that comes from this is that I can see it and know that there's a better way to live. The hope in this is that I'm willing to set these things right. The hope in this is that my higher power is going to replace, he's going to take away and replace these things with bigger and better things. But first, before I can ask God to take anything away, I got to see what needs to be taken away. My God knows, but there's a part of me that has to hold into this contract that I've made. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Good job.
So referring to our list again, that was just like, why? I've spent so much time with this list. I'm really sick of it. But, you know, I listed out the people, places, and things that made me angry. I took a different observation of those people, places, and things. And now I'm going into where was my part? And when my sponsor was like, okay, now write your part. I was like, what? I wouldn't have made my list so big had I known I had to do that. Okay, I would have left some things out. But she was like, nope, you gotta say your part. And that to me was really, really hard. Because again, I thought this whole time I was going to get justified in my anger, justified in my resentments, justified in my point of view, and that you were going to tell me it's okay. I get to wear this cloak of victimhood and I'm going to be okay. Nope. It's like you had to look at these people, places, and things, see that they were spiritually sick as well, and understanding that I am also spiritually sick, and where was my part in that mix? Looking at my part, taking that victimhood off, and just owning my part of it, and knowing that the inventory was mine, it wasn't anyone else's, and seeing my faults and listing them out in order to conduct further steps. That was when I realized I couldn't just take this list and walk off into a corner with Karen and just fix myself. That's when I realized I couldn't just take this list and leave the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with just a list of transgressions and issues that I may or may not cause, fancied or real, because now this is a lot of information for me to process at one time. This is a lot of information from my entire past up to this point. And I'm looking at it like, oh my gosh, this is so overwhelming. And I couldn't do it alone. And that's when further along, getting into the fifth step, sharing it with my sponsor, things like that. Those were the steps that solidified that I needed to be in the rooms with you. was because I realized looking at all of this information that I can't do this on my own. Like, look at what my own decisions have caused me. Look at all this resentment and anger and fear and worry and blocking me from the sunlight of the spirit and being the hours and years I lost being miserable. Look at all of this in front of me in black and white on paper. And now it's just so overwhelming. I'm like, where do I even go from here? And thankfully, the book tells me where to go step by step. It tells me what to do next, how to move forward, and to move forward with a sponsor and with the Fellowship of Alcoholics. And that is what got me through to the other side of this inventory. So if you're new and you're avoiding your inventory or you're looking at your inventory and it is just so overwhelming, you don't know what to do with it, that's okay, because you're not alone. You're in the fellowship, you're in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and hopefully you have a sponsor who's armed with the facts about themselves and takes you through the steps utilizing the book Alcoholics Anonymous one day at a time.
Thank you. All right, clap. And we're gonna pass. We're gonna pass the basket in accordance with the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety, our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA related announcements? Yes, John. David.
This home group in partnership 14 Norfolk is a good workshop. There are some lovely yellow flowers. July 26th. Nice. We got the name of all. Broad topic. All are welcome.
Anybody else? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Literature is available on the table over there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. If you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. We will help you get hooked up. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. The meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship that will be held at Cafe Stella right up Colonial Avenue. In closing, can we please thank Ebony and Karen again? Thanks to all who participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to line up, get up here, and say thank you to these ladies. And Jason has volunteered to read from A Vision for You.
A Vision for You, Big Book, page 64. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little, but God will constantly disclose more to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Get freely of what you find. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the. You will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road. May God bless you.
We have a nice way of closing. Oof. Our Father.
Our Father. Who are you? Heaven. Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Yeah. Shake it up.